everyone, thank you for joining us for Beardy and the Beast Media Club, a full spoiler discussion about a piece of media. These spoilers follow your lineage and you are bound to meet them eventually. If you enjoy what we do, please share us with your friend and check out beardyandthebeast.com for a full list of services where you're available on. My name is Drew, and as always, he's a fortress full of parakeets, Devin.
Yeah, okay.
The look in your eye made it seem like you were thinking it would be something like much worse than that.
Oh yeah.
Well, today we'll be discussing 2023's Studio Ghibli film Kimitachi wa do Ikaru ka, or by English title The Boy and the Heron. So Dev, does this gray heron tell the truth or does it lie?
I mean, do we really know? So, get this out of the way right off the bat. The Japanese name is How Do You Live? Mm-hmm. It's the name of the book that, you know, he finds that, you know, it's like, oh, they gave him the information about his mom a little bit and get that connection. The Boy and the Heron is not a good title for this film.
True.
There is nowhere near enough interaction between them to make, you know, the Heron a title character. He spends more time with Kiriko than the Heron. He's just kind of a side character.
And the thing is, like, I could see it if there was some overwhelming arc, or like that the Heron was really just a microcosm of the story. Yeah. But that wasn't the case.
No. I'm not sure whose decision it was to change name. I think they were wrong. Now that's out of the way.
Well, I suppose if they called it The Boy and His Two Moms, people would go into the film with very different expectations.
I mean, I guess in the back of my mind, I go, what was wrong with the title? So it's not like Belle, where they changed names. Like, I understand that, because The Speckled Princess and the Dragon?
I think it was translated Dragon.
I get that's a mouthful. Belle gives the same thing, because we've already got that cultural tie to Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. Belle ties to that. So, like, it's a good localization, right? Even though it's not a translation. Yeah, I just don't know why they... I think it's like, they look at us like, yeah, we've got the guy in the sidekick. I'm like, do you, though? Do you? Because it had me going in the movies like, okay, well, obviously the Heron's going to be a bigger thing than he really was overall. Yeah, and so I was like expecting some more like massive heroic moments as opposed to just happening to be there. True. Not one to go down himself.
Or even like a true amount of character growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that being said, it's not like they could call it The Boy or The Boy 2, which coincidentally was a film that Ashley was on the production crew for.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess How Do You Live might not.
So wait, how Do You Live was the original book that was published, like in the real world.
Yeah.
And then was that the book? So in the Ghibli, it was like loosely based on it, right?
No, it was original.
Okay, so How Do You Live, the book, was just the one that the boy was reading.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was important to the story, but it wasn't the story, as I understand it. As far as I know, this is like completely original Miyazaki. Mm. Just like Nausicaa was. So, and I mean, I obviously don't know the book, so I don't know how it ties or anything. At the very least, we know there's the emotional resonance to that book, Maito. And in that way, it makes more sense. And honestly, I think it makes more sense even just thematically in the film. Like, it really is the boy trying to know how to live, right? I mean, he's lost his mom. He's, you know, trying to be more grown up than he was. You know, saw some terrible things. It's affecting him. Might have damaged his brain a little bit, so he damaged his brain a little bit.
Well, and, like, I think you're really on point here, because getting used to his new reality and him going through it is literally the story of the entire film.
Yeah.
So, essentially, he's sad his mom's died and is getting replaced by her younger sister.
Yes.
So, he concusses himself, has some concussive hallucinations, and then grows to care about his ba, his new mom.
Yeah.
His aunt's mom.
Yeah.
Like, How Do You Live is perfect title for that, because it's like loose but makes a significant amount of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you get that bit of tie to, again, the actual book that was there. And you know, that having that emotional resonance, like seeing that his mom left it for him. Mm-hmm. It's important, big stuff.
You know what? That's the thing, though. Like, if I were to propose another title for this, I'd probably call it, like, How Will You Live?
Mm.
Especially because of the choice and decision-making at the end.
Yeah. And this is very, very loose thinking. I know that I think a lot of those words like will and do and such may be interchangeable, but I cannot remember enough Japanese verbiage to say for certain. But I know that there's something different with the tenses in how they use it. So will and how will you live and how do you live might be
the same thing.
Might be the same thing. Pure speculation. I'm not Googling that right now.
Hey man, I'm just the guy who does his best trying to pronounce the title of these films.
You do pretty good.
I do all right.
Yeah. It's everything about Ghibli I saw in this film. Even like some of the kind of more side things we've noted. Just looking at the opening scene, right, with the fire and everything. I saw it's Grave of the Firefly. I'm like, oh, is this the type of movie that we just went into? I haven't seen Graves of the Firefly, but I know.
Aren't you supposed to watch it because you lost a bet?
Pretty sure we just have it on the list and you told me that I'm going to watch it and you're not and going to laugh at me and record the past.
Enjoy that sadness, jerk. Well, even the animation in the fire scene, the humans in that scene seem very cartoonish and abstract, but the flames themselves had that painted Ghibli feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the most alive shots that we've seen, but yeah, it had that very Ghibli feeling. It had ties to that. Is that kind of that immediately sparked ideas of Graves of the Fireflies to me. They also did kind of the same animation style as they did with Kaguya.
Yes.
Like, I immediately went back to that beast mode scene from Kaguya as he is running there. Like, and that's something that's been very unique to Kaguya.
Wait, does that make Kaguya a transformer?
Yes.
A beast machine?
Yes.
Beast mode. Joker, joker, joker.
I forgot it's called Beast Machines.
Because there was Beasties and there was Beast Machines.
Right, right.
There was two different names. And they might have changed the Canadian one partway through to match the American one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, you had a lot of your, and for now I'll refer to them as tropes, like your well-painted backgrounds with your sense of movement. You had characters that seemed like they would be bad or antagonistic that turned out to be like useful and friendly, whereas the opposite was true. Like your cute creatures became like the antagonistic thing. You had anthropomorphized animals that had full communication abilities and were just full-fledged characters. And of course, I saw them in at least one shot. You had these little cute white things that were bouncing around.
Yeah.
So you're like your little cute mascots.
I would call it trademarks, not tropes.
Well, I'm calling them tropes very specifically because this movie, to me, felt like it was a Ghibli movie for Western audiences.
Mm.
Maybe not fully. So I would say that statement is hyperbole, but it didn't seem to have the same symbolism and complexity as some of the other films. I mean, it was definitely more complex than, say, Earwig, but it was pretty much just on the nose with everything that it was kind of showing.
Yeah, well, I've got my dark Ghibli theory from this already. I'll share that in a bit. I'm not sure if it's necessarily I don't know if it was like any more or less complex than Kiki's. Like, it's not Nausicaä or Spirited or Mononoke where they're trying to like row in other messages with it.
Let's just say there was at a point of the film that it seemed simple enough that I was hoping for like the Ghibli twist that I hate and be like, oh, the Parakeet King was actually his mom too the entire time.
Okay, I did think there was going to be a twist like that, but I didn't think that was going to be the twist. I thought the twist was going to be that Aunt Mom was actually just Mom.
Oh, is that your dark theory then?
No, that's not my dark theory. No, that's just one of the things that I thought could be there. It's just that, yeah, no, I saw you once, like when you were just born, and, you know, right? Just one of those things that I could see happening. No, my dark Ghibli theory for this one here is because the parakeet decided to destroy that stone tower instead of Mahito building it anew,
yep,
that's when the bombs dropped.
They definitely alluded to something like that when they're like, if you go back, it'll be a world of fire. And I'm like, oh, they're going there?
Yeah. Yep.
And then for it to turn out they were actually on like the outskirts of...
Yeah.
And I was like, no, they're not going to do that. I like,
yeah,
put it in the back of my head. But I don't know. I just like,
this is just the prequel to Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh. There was definitely something odd about it. I do feel that it missed something Ghibli on the surface. Like, as I understand it, it's not getting like the standard high praise that Ghibli movies get. But on the other hand, I think this movie is actually going to age really well.
I think so too.
I think it'll get better if you watch it again in like 3 or 6 months.
When I saw it in the theater, there may or may not have been a bunch of weebs beside me.
Oh no.
May or may not have been cosplaying. And there guy's like, oh yeah, no, that wasn't a very good Ghibli film. And I have to go, it's like, I think they're wrong, but I think you kind of hit it. Like you hit it when you said this movie's going to age a lot better than they think it is.
Yep.
And again, we saw similar things with like Kaguya and such too, where it's actually aged quite well. It's just no one's seen it. This one here, everyone's going to see it by the sounds of everything I'm hearing.
Well, it also sounds like the people that you're sitting next haven't actually seen the breadth of the Ghibli movies.
Yeah, there's a lot of mix there. But this is kind of my point. We've kind of touched on this a bit more with the Chizu films.
Yeah,
which they worked on this. Both Chizu and UFO Table worked on this film as well. That's what happens when you stick around for the credits, Drew. You see things like this.
How'd you know?
You didn't stick around for the credits?
I literally like, oh, credits are rolling. I'm leaving now.
And there were short credits. Like, it was just a song. It was just done. But yeah, no, like Chizu, like Studio Chizu and UFO Table were about 6 of these studios that actually did some of the animation for it.
Wait, does that mean I can put it in both playlists?
Yes. Which is an interesting thing, complete side tangent, because you don't see that happen in North America. You'll never see Illumination and Disney working together.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to the point that put me on that side tangent. When we were watching the Chizu films, especially when we looked at Boy and the Beast, comparing that to Belle, we were talking about how it did that coming of age story for Boy very well.
Mm-hmm.
Most of Ghibli's coming of age stories have always been around a female protagonist.
True.
So in a way, this is kind of out of the comfort zone, I feel, because like Mononoke, it's not a coming of age story for him. It's a very different thing. So that could be where I think it's not feeling quite as quote unquote Ghibli, because it's a different fantasy that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But the structure of it is still closer to that Spirited Away.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, and I think as people come to understand it more, mm-hmm. that's what's going to make it age well.
Yeah.
And this kind of brings us back to the whole title thing. Like, even until the end, like, it was a very simple movie in what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was this boy making a decision, like, was he going to live with animosity to his current situation, or was he going to let it go and grow?
And it accumulates to a pretty good point, too, just before the parakeet king goes and destroys the stones.
You mean Chad Parakeet?
Yes.
Parakeet King was right the whole time.
Where,
Hashtag know, release the parakeet cut.
Makes sense. But he, he's like, he calls out the stones and, you know, recognizes the malice on them already.
Mm-hmm.
So he refuses for that reason. Then he gets stones that he recognizes, okay, no, these are actually, you know, pure, would be able to do something. But he recognizes the malice in himself.
Yep.
I mean, that just, again, just ties to the, I think that ties very well to the how do you live? It's like, okay, well, I've got that there. So can I be this person? Can I do what needs to be done? And recognizing that and trying to find ways to grow through that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, and the way that that was structured was actually very well done. Because, like, the real choice was whether or not he would stay and rule that world with, you know, patience and maliciousness, or was he going to leave and kind of be, not reborn, but become anew?
Mm-hmm.
if it was made to simply just be about the blocks, if he had stayed, it wouldn't have the same kind of impact. It means he wouldn't have actually grown. Because there was technically three choices there.
Mm.
Ruling, you know, with kindness and whatnot still means that he would be escaping his current existence. It was just, like, we'll take the other parts of the story out of it and just, like, kind of laser focus on the ending. I think it definitely had the trademarks that we know of Ghibli movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't put it in my top five. I mean, I don't even know if I have a top five, considering how I feel about most Ghibli movies, but... and, you know, well, I
top is Kaguya.
I guess, like, Kaguya, Mononoke, Nausicaa. I thought Kiki's was delightful. Mm. Not a big spirited guy.
Mm.
I mean, if we look at the bottom, the very bottom, you have Howls, and then you have Earwig just above that.
I love how much you hate Howls. I haven't seen it in so long.
I
can't wait till we actually go and watch it.
I actually don't even know if I dislike it anymore or if it's just the memes. Because, you know what? The thing about Howls is, subjectively, like, on the couple watches I did of it, I didn't find it interesting at all. I thought, like, the Scarecrow was the prince the whole time, like, added nothing to the film. Like, there was a whole bunch of stuff to it that I was just like, no, this is actually just spectacle. But if I were to watch it with objective intent, maybe it holds up. Maybe it's one of the best movies I've seen. I just subjectively don't like it, right?
Like, I know Howl's, I think, is their most successful, I want to say. I think I was reading that.
Mm.
From what I remember, right, I'd say it's mid. It's not the best thing out there. It's not Earwig.
I'm pretty sure Howl's, isn't it the most popular one?
Yeah.
Which to me, like, Kaguya or Nausicaa.
Well, yeah, that's why I just found it funny, like, hearing people in the theater go, I was like, oh yeah, no, it wasn't as good as other people. I'm like,
There is a spectrum there from bad to good. And even me as not a Ghibli enthusiast fully recognize.
Yeah.
Frankly, they're wrong and they should feel bad. And I hope they know that I'm directly shaming them. And this is where they sneeze three times and realize that someone's talking about them behind their backs.
Accurate. It's kind of interesting, like, talking about it, because you're right, because it's not as deep as some of the others. So it's not, it doesn't quite have that same, you know, we're not going to have a discussion of, you know, Wolf Mom versus Lady Eboshi.
It's a complexity thing. So the storylines of the others at least make you feel like there's twisting pathways, even when it's completely like a straight road in front of them.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like they have many options and they might even feel burdened by choices or they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they didn't illustrate that, which, I mean, could have been a creative decision. But yeah. It's kind of one of the things with Ghibli, like...
Most of the time, they're better being gray.
Yeah. I think that's the better way to put it than how I'm explaining it.
Yeah, I think most of the time they're better at being gray. I just think we didn't have enough time with the grand uncle to get that gray, because that's where the room for the gray would have been.
Mm.
But I also understand that, because, like, unlike, again, Spirited Away, where it's I can't remember her name, whatever her name is, where she's trying to just navigate and get through the world. And she's feeling lost. Mihoto didn't have that. He wasn't lost in the same way. He was always pushing himself forward. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get that same type of complexity. He knew what he was there for, and that was it. So we couldn't have that room of gray. The only thing he cared about was going and saving his aunt mom. So it stunted that interaction right off the get-go.
I follow you. I agree.
Yeah, it's just a difference in the character motivations.
Yeah, the only thing that made you really feel that kind of grayness is when he goes into the birthing chamber and, like, he's got a mission, he's gonna rescue his aunt mom, and she just straight up's like, no, go away, you need to leave now, I hate you, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you don't hate him.
I loved that scene.
Like, you want him to leave because you know it's dangerous for him. Now, if they wanted to put an extra layer of complexity, you could read into that as in, he reminds her your sister who passed on.
Yeah.
And now she's burdened with him, which I could see a tinge there, but that is definitely not like the main thing, because how much she was trying to welcome him and take care of him when he arrived.
See, that was actually the part where it entered my head a lot more, that no, maybe she actually is his mom.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because it was that, it was obvious that no, she doesn't hate him. She is saying this because you say that to try to push the person away, because you are trying everything you can to save them, even if that means destroying the relationship. And it was so obvious that that's what that was.
Yeah.
They didn't even try to play with it because he saw through it. She realized he saw through it. Which I actually appreciated that they did that, because most would let that sit and linger and forever and, you know, be a source of the drama. It's like, no, it didn't need to be. But again, I think that goes back to the clarity of Maito's purpose. He was there and allowed to go through that. I did not see the twist of that being his mom from when she went missing.
So as you know, I missed a small part of the film.
Yes.
So they do this scene where there's a woman on a boat and she's shooting fire into the sky.
Yeah.
I'm like, huh, that's weird. And then as soon as she popped out of the fireplace at the blacksmith's house, I was like, oh, that's his mom.
Yeah. To be fair, none of what you missed, that small piece that you missed, had that. That was literally her first introduction and her next introduction. For the record, he missed where Maito meets up with young Kiriko, and just like that little tiny bit. So
the one I didn't get was the old lady that he entered with, who somehow got turned into a wooden doll, ended up being his adventure companion.
Yes.
That I didn't get, even though they were wearing like the same colors until like 3/4 of the way through the movie. I was like, wait a minute, isn't she wearing...
Oh, so that's a little bit you missed. Okay, so what you missed was he's like going through and he's looking for Aunt Mom, and you know, it was on this like little island. There's like this gate and what looks like kind of like a tomb like shrines, and a bunch of pelicans come and attack him, and they break open the shrine.
Oh yeah, I saw they got on a boat after that.
Okay, yeah. So they then catch some fish, and you know Kiriko shows them how to cover up the fish so they can feed the little white things, which are like, you know, babies to be born. And basically, so when he's sleeping there's a bunch of the carvings of all of the old ladies around him for protection, and he just calls her by her name. She's like, but how, you didn't even know my name. It was pretty obvious. That's how you find out. So just like you recognize it, oh, that's who it is. He did the same thing and just called her out on it.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, I think it's that same thing where it's not, because what I gathered, I think Kiriko got lost both times. I think she also got lost when his mom got lost.
Yeah.
So I still think that was like young. So I think both of them were from the past.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So both of them were from the past.
Because it was the old lady from the past who had came with her, but she didn't remember, because when they leave the world, they forget.
Yeah. And then, that's why you had the old lady got turned into a wood doll. So technically wasn't the same Kiriko, but was. See, that's where the complexity comes in. Time travel.
Well, Nate, technically speaking, it may not have even been his mom. It may have been a third mom. So, I mean, I'm definitely going with that it was his mom. But the way that she explained the doors as they were walking through the hallway and like explaining how these are actually passages to many different worlds, it's entirely possible that it was just like a different dimension. But narratively, it's just so much more satisfying that.
So I think there were doors through time and space.
Yeah, for
sure. Just because I think it would have had to have been his mom with the story as presented in time, just because she was also considered an heir. So that alone kind of leads to that.
This makes me wonder. So they forget when they leave the world, but if he forgot his adventure and how he grew to make the decision that he made when he came back, will he still have gone through that growth? Will he still, or would he not be the same as when he left? But he's...
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, so I think it's implied that he's not going to forget. Because the Heron asks, says, like, oh yeah, you're going to forget. Mm-hmm. It's not like you brought any keepsakes with you, which he clearly did.
Oh yeah, he has the part of the thing on the ground. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's the inclination. And I think there could be another aspect to that too. So I know both Miyazaki and Miyamoto have kind of talked about the sense of adventure they had when they were growing up.
Yeah.
And that's what inspired a lot of the Ghibli's films and like Legend of Zelda series, which I know Drew loves.
Best series, definitely the best series. There's no series that is better than Zelda.
He loves it as much as he loves Howls.
I'm just offending everyone. Any of our new subscribers are just gonna unsub as soon as they're like, doesn't like Howls, doesn't like Zelda.
Yeah.
Now he's gonna say that he doesn't like BTS. That's not true. I actually do like BTS.
And now we can put that into the description of the.
Oh jeez.
anyway, Miyamoto and Miyazaki, but they've both talked about that kind of adventure they had when growing up. And this film, again, unlike others in similar vein, very much felt like that adventure. It was just the, I wonder what's in this hole.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if the idea of forgetting is forgetting in that sense of adventure.
Mm. That's part of being youthful in these stories, right? Mm-hmm. So if we were to take Kiki's as an example, there was two ways of maturing for Kiki. Mm-hmm. There was maturing as a witch, and then there was maturing as like just a human,
yeah,
regular person. And I think the symbolism between maturing as a human when she started losing her powers, like it was part of the confusion that she was experiencing,
mm-hmm,
but it was kind of like her growing and like acclimating to the people around her.
Yeah.
And part of that is losing your sense of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So what one can say is like, as you grow, you naturally lose that. But that being said, I don't think The Boy and the Heron is about youth per se, but I think this is definitely a recurring theme, mm-hmm, in the Ghibli movies altogether.
Well, and I think that's why I mentioned it more so, because that's where I see it tying in the best.
Mm.
Do you think it has more in line with something like Spirited Away than Mononoke or Nausicaä?
Mm.
Or, right, there is that coming of age aspect there. It's just, again, he had direction, even if he didn't know what to do with it, which, yep, is not something that Kiki had, and not something that, it's going to bother me that I don't remember her name. I keep thinking of Shizu from Bell.
Mm.
And now I'm, Chihiro?
It wasn't lost. I think thematically it was very well framed that it was to him to make a choice,
mm,
which he did at the end. So opposed to being lost, I would say uncertain is probably the best way. And that's what likely gives Boy and the Heron a different feeling than some of the other Studio Ghibli films.
Yeah.
Because it's got a different like stressor to it.
I think he was lost in the world, but he wasn't lost in himself. He was always him. That didn't change. Well, just knowing his place in the world and how to go through it was, compared to, you know, Kiki and Spirited, where they knew their place in the world but were lost internally. Like, where they were lost was kind of reversed, and where their confidence was.
I wonder if you could tie this in feeling closer to Nausicaä using, mm-hmm, those kind of descriptors. They have very similar personalities, so at no point did Nausicaä feel like lost internally. It was definitely her place in the world that she was struggling with. She was well singular focused. I think she'd be the most direct comparative character to our protagonist in this film, which I can't remember his name. I just keep referring to him as him.
Mahito.
So that's probably the best analog from our female protagonist from the earlier films.
The reason I have a little bit harder time tying that is like when we were discussing Nausicaä, kind of realized how it was a lot of the building blocks of Ghibli, but hadn't quite found its place.
Mm-hmm.
And it found its place for Nausicaä specifically with Princess Mononoke, and I can't tie this character to Mononoke. So there's a bit of disconnect in my head for comparing those stories.
Mm. I mean, I see what you mean. But if you take Mononoke out of the picture, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. I'm having a hard time.
Well, I mean, who's going to take Mononoke out of the picture?
Yeah, exactly.
Top five.
I'm pretty sure we said this. Like, yeah, definitely. You can't take out Mononoke. Heck, it's the reason why most people in North America even know what Ghibli is.
Facts. You know, I think that I made one mistake.
Okay, changing the title.
The Grand Uncle, when he was introduced, wasn't hot. What they should have done is had him hot until it was clear the world was falling apart, and then rapidly aged him as he realized it was his time to pass on. And then
people would try to Ponyo.
People would be like, 5 out of 5. Oh, Ponyo was so good.
It was. You know what? Actually, that is where some of that connection comes from. I think this actually connects to Ponyo better.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, it's definitely like starting at Nazca and then following a trajectory through Ponyo.
Yeah. There's an aspect of me that goes to, like, was there purposeful homage to his earlier works in this? Like, I know there was, like, some things, like, some of the book covers were a little bit reminiscent of some of the imagery through. We've already kind of talked about some of the visuals, like, again, that unique Kaguya look. They did something similar with in that birthing chamber with, like, the white papers that felt very reminiscent of Mononoke to me, with, like, the corruption that was there.
Well, and it does kind of follow suit there, because the corruption was, like, the maliciousness in men's hearts, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I have to say it. This is probably the perfect time to strengthen the meme. But the Parakeet King was right the whole time. So, the Parakeet Society grew in maliciousness in part to a lack of food and the environment that they were in.
Mm-hmm.
Two factors that could be completely controlled by our wizard on the hill.
Mm.
Now, the Grand Uncle admitted himself that he was ruling with impatience and maliciousness in his heart.
Yeah.
And he was stacking blocks made of gravestone. I think the Parakeets had the right to feel negative about their circumstance, and it was right for them. It was the wrong thing to do, but it was right for them to effectively start a revolt and try to take their fates in their own hands by taking over the world.
Well, it's interesting because they didn't even start a revolt. They were literally just following the law. I think, okay, I'm remiss to call it a miss, but I think this is where that it feeling not Ghibli enough idea comes from again, because this Parakeet Society,
yep,
would have been Lady Eboshi.
Like the lepers.
Yeah. But again, it was one of those things because we didn't have that, what did we call it? We called it the valley that some of these characters were, that the winds were going through.
Yeah.
We didn't have that in this case. So we had such a strong protagonist that we were following with his motivations. So we didn't see these other things. And again, so even comparing that to Nausicaa, like you said, it has that good connection to it. There was clear motivations between the factions.
Oh, you are 100% correct. And that's what pulls away from it feeling Ghibli per se, because Lady Eboshi or the Fallen Society boy that they meet in Nausicaa.
Yeah.
I'm struggling, but there's always these characters like, so all the side characters have some type of impact, and even if they don't have a major impact, they have clear motivations. And they don't just outright say what the motivation is.
Mm.
The main character, through spending time with them, discovers what their motivation is. You can see that with Lady Eboshi and the lepers, right?
Yeah.
However, in this one, it's just like the Parakeet King shows up and he's like, we are the downtrodden, we are the starved, and I'm going to stand up for this.
Yeah.
If this was an earlier Ghibli work, they would have spent time with the Parakeet King and actually developed, like, why he has animosity for the Grand Uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you nailed it. 100%.
Which goes right back to this is close, has more in line with Ponyo than a lot of the other works. And I think Ponyo was honestly, again, a very strong film.
Yeah.
And it was simpler, and that didn't take away from it. But I also think most people over here probably haven't watched Ponyo. It is never one of the ones you hear people talking about. I've heard Porco Rosso mentioned more than I've heard Ponyo mentioned.
I don't know anything about Porco Rosso. I don't like. I think Neither I've seen I. a poster of Porco Rosso.
Yeah, that is about where I'm at with it. But I've heard that. I think I've heard that filming conversation more than I've ever heard Ponyo. And again, that one also looks like Ponyo was an original work by Miyazaki again. So not based on anything like a lot of the stuff tends to be, even though it was clearly based off the Little Mermaid. Bite me.
All right. Random website here.
All right.
Give me a sec. Their top five. Really? Okay.
All right.
Random website. I'm not going to say what it was, but I'll give you their top five.
Okay.
Coming in at five, The Tale of Princess Kaguya.
Okay. Okay. Respectable.
I mean, definitely a top fiver. I think people sleep on Kaguya. Number Agreed. Four, Grave of the Fireflies.
I get it. I haven't seen it, but from what I understand of how it hits, I understand that being in the top. Okay, cool. We're good.
Number three, Castle in the Sky.
Okay, so not going to lie, and I'm pretty sure we've had this conversation before. I think for some reason my brain can mix up like Nazca, Castle in the Sky, and Howl's.
Yes. Castle in the Sky is the one you think you've seen, but you actually haven't, or you saw once and you don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Castle in the Sky, however, is, in my opinion, great in the same way the film that shall not be named is great, and how influential it was for everything around
it. Yeah.
Number two, Totoro.
So, Totoro is an amazing piece.
It's iconic.
I don't know if I would call it top five.
Agreed.
But again, I think that goes back to, here's all the movies that people remember, and that is one that everyone remembers seeing, but I don't think they know the body of work. Okay.
Number one, Spirited Away.
Okay, so, and I think Spirited Away is top for me. I know you said that subjectively you don't like it. There seems to be a couple of films that should be there that seem to be missing.
I will tell you one thing.
All right.
They're not super incorrect here.
Right.
They at least put Howl's like in the teens.
All right.
But if we were to do our honorary mentions, we have Nazca at six, Mononoke at seven. For some reason, The Boy and the Heron at eight. So I think it's a subjective list.
Yeah.
Because if I were to tell a Ghibli fan my top five, especially when I'm leading in with like Kaguya and Nazca, they would be like, maybe top 10, but top five, right?
Yeah. And I think it's fairly fair. It's like, okay, I can see that one being there. They are objectively wrong not having Mononoke in there. Like, I mean, we had this discussion. It's like Mononoke and Nazca are very close. I have to give it to Mononoke because it's everything Nazca wanted to be after they've been seasoned.
Facts.
Right? It's just objectively, they told the very similar story and actually told the story they wanted to. And, you know, that's what happens with 20 years experience under your belt by the time that comes out.
Now, all this standing, though, is I heard rumor that this is going to be, that The Boy and the Heron is going to be Miyazaki's last film.
Just like Kaguya was.
You ruined where I was going with this. But for a body of works, especially what you've done in all your earlier films, does The Boy and the Heron feel like the keystone and the arch of the Hayao Miyazaki works?
It doesn't feel like the keystone. You know, it doesn't feel like a keystone. I wouldn't say this is his absolute masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Again, I will hands down say that's Kaguya.
Well, that's why you ruined it, because if his final one was Kaguya, it'd be like, oh no, that makes sense in every sense of the way. But in this case, it's like the boy and the heron.
Yeah.
Now you gotta do it in comparison to Kaguya, and Kaguya is way stronger a film.
Yeah. It's not the keystone. I don't think it leaves that same impact.
Yeah.
But even with this being even if this is actually his last piece, I don't think it's a bad send-off.
I can see that, especially where we've established that this movie's probably going to get better over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're looking at the works of Miyazaki, 10 years down the road, I think The Boy and the Heron's going to be one that people remember.
Yeah.
And they'll look back fondly on.
Yeah, that's what I think. Again, it's just got those... For me, it's got the right feelings from the films that I consider some of their stronger pieces. And again, they're the pieces that people don't talk about for some reason. It's the Ponyos. It's the it's the Kaguyas. Because, I don't know, it's... I'm not sure if we've actually ever talked about this. There's a lot of people who say they love the Ghibli films and watch them all, but they haven't. They've watched what the mainstream has.
Oh, yeah, they've watched Spirit Away and Howls, and they're like, I'm the biggest. Yeah. I'm the best Ghibli fan. And it's like, at this point... Me, not a Ghibli enthusiast, has seen more Ghibli films than most American
people. Well, that's exactly it. And like, we've gone out of our way with the Ghibli films in general to make sure we're balancing, hey, cool, here's the big popular one. Now let's balance it with one that's, not so popular, or one that we've never seen. So we're giving ourselves this.
Remember that time we were going to watch Ponyo because we thought it would be silly and a joke, and then it turned out to actually be pretty decent?
Yep. I mean, Earwig aside, like...
Oh, Earwig's trash.
Yeah, Earwig's just trash.
Earwig was the intro to the real movie we should have got.
Yeah. Again, I think, regardless of what we say, like, I know... We've got the crapping all over Howls and such that. Like, overall, these are strong films. It's not... There's something about the magic in them, like, both subjectively and objectively. Like, he's got a very good way of making fairy tales, making modern fairy tales. Every one of his films has that. This even has that same feel to it, which is something that makes these films timeless, makes them... interest and go back and watch, even if they're not necessarily the best, and just howl along. I don't think people actually appreciate Ghibli as much as they say they do.
Well, so it's kind of one of those things, like, let's use the dirtiest word out there, gamer. It doesn't actually take much to be a gamer. Gaming just has to be your hobby. If you sit down and you play Peggle for 2 hours a day, you're a gamer. My mom's a gamer. Just because her chosen things are Peggle and the pinball game that's on the computer, or like Farm Town or whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't make her any less of a gamer than someone who likes Puzzle Bobble and Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so what I'm trying to say is, like, you can very much be a Ghibli fan and only like the whimsical, on the face of it, very magical... adventure feeling ones.
Yeah.
And not having seen the more gritty story driven character driven ones. But
so I see where you're going with this line of thinking, and you're right. Technically, my mom sitting down playing Candy Crush all night could make her a gamer, but she's never going to call herself a gamer. And so when you're talking about people are going, it's like, oh yeah, no, I'm a big fan of all their stuff. There's a different level to being a fan of Ghibli films and being a Ghibli fan. Just there's a difference between someone who's playing games and being a gamer.
I mean, I think I'm the best representation of a fan of Ghibli films, but not a fan of Ghibli.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like I just know we've seen more. I can tell we've seen more, and it's because of that discourse that you have around it. And I mean, I saw the same thing when we were watching. Let's see, I've seen the same type of discourse around Belle.
Mm.
Right? Like, we saw some of those articles coming out. I was like, you did not watch the same movie that we did. I can tell.
Well, a lot of those articles where, like, it's become less so, but at the time Bell came out, it was really on the tail end of people trying to project themselves onto characters.
Yeah.
It's like, I am this way, therefore the character that I like is also this way.
Yeah.
But the problem in this case is Bell was actually a strong character.
Yeah.
She was written quite well.
Yeah.
Terrible daughter, strong character.
She came around.
Did she, though? She probably stabbed him. turns out that Belle's actually living like the boy she saved, but instead of the father being an abusive a-hole, she's the abusive a-hole, and it's her dad who goes into video games to escape the torture. That's my Belle, anyways. Great movie. Check out Belle.
So good.
Yeah, but my point is, I think it's less about the film they saw and the fact that their representative had to be a mirror image of them, the people writing the article. And thankfully, I feel like we're going away from that now, where representation is being about the motivations or the originations, not being a mirror image of a demographic.
That's because no one's seeing the movies where you're a mirror image of a demographic anymore.
it's kind of one of those things, to go on a rant I've gone on before. It's like original Star Wars films, and I think they're okay. Everybody likes Han or Leia. They're complex characters, they're mysteries, they want to get to know them. Luke Skywalker is a representation of a demographic.
Yeah. And I mean, even as someone who has read all of the books, like, you know, Luke definitely gets more character, but it's Mara Jade is the one you remember.
More character? Red. I think you mispronounced Blue Milk. Autocorrect is weird, am I right?
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. There's only six movies. Oh, I guess there's technically Blue Milk in the first one. That's just a Tatooine thing. Anyways. I think we had similar conversations around things like Squid Game, but we discussed people's view on Squid Game very differently than I'm talking about, like, the anime fans here, because a lot of the conversation around Squid Game was very clearly a new audience being introduced to that.
Mm-hmm.
So while we're going, it's like, yeah, it's okay. We've seen dozens of things that have done the same concept better.
I've seen like episode of the week variety shows out of Korea, like Liar's Game, that stupid high school death one on the island.
Battle Royale. Yeah.
I mean, I say stupid, but it was hugely popular.
It's good. Right. We were able to recognize that. We could understand why people are liking this. We're glad they're finally getting introduced to this. We've liked this stuff, you know, when we would get put into our lockers for liking this stuff.
I mean, and maybe you, but I was... I actually grew really fast until the end of junior high. Because when I got to high school, everybody got way taller than me. No one was bullying me.
But that's why I find it so weird when you get, you know, the people who are, again, anime fans enough to cosplay and, you know, book out half a theater to go see it as a group and not seem to get the Ghibliness of the film.
I get it. No one is as deeply a Ghibliite as you. You are the only true fans. Always gatekeep your hobby. It's for the best.
100%. Always gatekeep your hobby. I swear to God. There is one convention that I go to that has gatekeeped a bit, and it is fantastic. They are literally not changing their venue because they want to keep it small and make sure it's only the room that's crowd going to it.
Literally, if you don't gatekeep your hobby, you're going to go to your next Ghibli film, and I'm going to pull up, and in the middle of the movie, I'm just going to yell, "Howl sucks!" It's because you let me into your hobby. That was your choice to try to include me. Your decision. I'm acting on my nature. My nature is to yell, "Howl suck." I'm a slave to my nature. Like the sun must rise in the morning, I must yell, Howl's suck.
It's true. I can't wait till we go and watch it. You're like, oh no, it was actually pretty good.
Tom movie, it's the best. And you know what? I was giving a thought about Zelda, and I think I'm gonna get myself a Switch. To be fair, I almost bought a Switch a couple times, but then I realized, like, for what? Like, Gris and Hades are on computer, and like Mario Sunshine is probably the best Mario game, and what, Zelda?
I mean, you're wrong about Mario Sunshine being the best.
So good.
Galaxy is so much better.
It doesn't make Sunshine not good.
I couldn't stand. Galaxy was the first 3D Mario game that I actually like enjoyed.
See, what we have here is someone who is gatekeeping their hobbies like he should. Anyways.
Long story short, this movie is going to age a lot better than what those people in the theater were talking about.
I honestly could see at least one or two of them in the end being like, you know what, that's actually one of my favorites.
Yeah.
They just, once you watch it again, it's kind of like, I can't actually use that reference because that film is going to be the one that comes out after this. Anyway. Yeah, that's fine.
It's a spoiler.
Just like Johnny Cash is hurt, we're gonna go back in time and have Nine Inch Nails cover it. I think this movie deserves a second watch.
Yeah,
I don't think it requires a second watch, but I think it definitely deserves it.
I agree. Right, that's a film that's gonna be coming out after that. Okay. Yeah, no,
it's The Wailing.
Yeah,
it's the Korean film The Wailing. Not flying whales like in Belle.
Yeah.
Like wailing, like the sound of me yelling Howl's suck in a crowded movie theater.
Like you trying to keep your hobbies. I got distracted by his gatekeeping hobbies and I forgot what I was gonna say.
Oh, no, I'm pretty much done.
Yeah. Should be watched again. Doesn't need a second watch, but it, like a lot of really good films, it's just gonna be a film you'll go back to, like Belle.
Make sure not to fall asleep in the middle of it.
Yeah, good call.
Fiend,